Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast where a year is a lifetime in politics. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hello, Corey.
We are drinking. This is an episode about Donald Trump, therefore the wine cellars of the nuclear bunker open up. It is a year on now from that night where Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton, or should I say the Electoral College and the Russians beat Hillary Clinton. There's been quite a bit of news in Washington as well, hasn't there, Steve?
Just a bit. Former director of the FBI, who has been investigating Russian interference in the US presidential election, has made his first set of indictments. Two major indictments, one being Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's former campaign manager, and Manafort's business partner, a man by the name of Rick Gates. This, however, is actually the relatively small fry stuff, despite Manafort being a big name. What he's been indicted with is effectively just tax evasion. There's a wonderful phrase on the indictment, which is something along the lines of conspiracy against the United States, which got a lot of people very excited very, very quickly on Twitter. But that is just the language that is utilised when you're talking about defrauding, basically, the tax man out of what is duly owed to him. So, for the most part, it looks like Gates and Manafort are currently being indicted for money laundering, tax evasion, not declaring themselves to be foreign agents of foreign powers, i.e. in the pay of the Ukrainian and Russian governments, but nothing directly linking Trump to Russia. However, beneath that, there was a third bombshell, which was dropped on the same day. Earlier in October, Rob Mueller had actually managed to persuade a gentleman by the name of George Papadopoulos to plead guilty to, in effect, lying to the FBI over questions about Russian interference. This is pretty big news, because Papadopoulos was working for Trump on national security matters and was involved in seemingly the shaping of Trump's policy towards Russia, i.e. the idea of dropping sanctions and all of those sorts of activities. That, right there, is the first real major blow, because it's the first instance that we can see of Mueller actually finding someone doing something properly wrong, directly linked to the situation of Russian interference. And what's even more interesting is that from careful reading of the indictment and from looking at the basically the sentence he's likely to get, Papadopoulos is likely to get, it looks like he's been flipped, he's been wearing a wire, he's been basically helping Mueller actually gather evidence. This is something which is obviously very, very bad news for Trump and any of his cohorts who may or may not have actually been involved in colluding with the Russians.
Yeah, because my knowledge of police procedure essentially involves watching old episodes of Inspector Morse. But what generally seems to happen is that you, to try and catch the big kingpin, you try and arrest one of the minor players and you try and get them a reduced sentence in order to testify against the big guy. And that is what a lot of people seem to think is going to happen in the Papadopoulos case.
To a certain extent, yes. I don't necessarily think it's a case that Papadopoulos will take the stand against someone, against whether it be Trump, Sessions, or you know whoever else. But what we are seeing with this is basically the first sign that Mueller has got something. Mm. There is something actually there. Because up until now, Mueller, due to his iron will and discipline, has leaked basically nothing at all. And so everything was hearsay. You've got lots of commentators saying that, of course, this happened, or that piecing together little bits of information, saying this makes sense as a narrative. but no actual evidence that actually there was any collusion. The fact that Papadopoulos seems to have flipped suggests there is something there. And that is obviously very bad news for Trump, Sessions, anybody else who may have been involved.
Well, because there's interesting bits in the footnotes of these indictments as well, isn't there? Which, you can correct me on this, but as far as I can tell, are essentially saying we need to get someone at the meeting who isn't DT. DT, I assume, is Donald Trump, and that DT wants to be aware of this but can't be at the meeting, so it's trying to find surrogates for him to attend these meetings too.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, that looks to be the case of what's going on, which is, again, I say why this is quite big news.
Donald Trump maybe issued the greatest tweet that any American president will ever tweet when he said in big bold capitals, and again, you always know, listeners, that a tweet's going to be something extra special when it's in block capitals, especially when it's from the president of a country, saying in block capitals that we need to do something. The response from Trump and the Republicans has been essentially to muddy the waters, try and claim that Clinton was somehow colluding with the Russians to get her to lose the campaign, or that somehow Clinton had paid for the Steele dossier, which has on Trump, which doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No, there has been a concerted effort in the US, especially on the right-wing media networks, Fox, Sean Hannity, talk radio hosts, to try and, as you say, muddy the waters by trying to bring the conversation back round to Clinton, because apparently Hillary Clinton is still relevant. But, I'd say, they're trying to link things back to literally Bill Clinton's administration as well. They are desperately clawing for something, anything, to try and actually take the attention off of the Russian investigation. Including, there have been some discussions about creating a special counsel to investigate Hillary Clinton for various things, I think, including the email saga, probably Benghazi, as well as the situation with selling uranium to Russia.
All the greatest hits.
Yeah, pretty much all of the same, which came to nothing because there was nothing there for the most part. You know, Clinton was dumb in how she handled her email server, absolutely, but you know, it's been investigated to death at this point, and nothing illegal was found.
The obvious parallel is Watergate, and in many ways what's going on is worse than Watergate. But in the 70s, there was still a measure of bipartisanship in Congress, and you could have a delegation of Republican senators who would go to Nixon and say, this is too much, you need to go, and Nixon would know the game is up.
Mm-hmm.
And this disinformation, as you say, from the right, feels like it could be the pretext for either Republicans to ignore a lot of what Mueller says and not begin impeachment proceedings against Trump, or if Trump wants to fire Mueller in any way, the Republicans may not condemn that, may not start impeachment proceedings against Trump if he did that. And the key thing when Nixon tried to fire, I believe it was a special prosecutor who was looking into the Watergate scandal, when Nixon tried to fire that chap, that's when his problems multiplied.
Yeah.
And how much of a spine, I can't even believe I'm asking this question, how much of a spine do you think Paul Ryan and the Republicans have? And how much of a spine do you think a few senators have who, I mean, they've said quite critical things about Trump, but haven't necessarily done much to stop him?
You've got to divide basically the Republicans up into the two camps. One being the Senate, the other being the House of Representatives. In the Senate, what we're actually seeing is some interesting breaks. Both Bob Corker and Jeff Flake both announced that they are not going to be standing again, and they're not going to seek re-election in 2018. This means they are now free of the crazy, crazy Republican base and no longer need to kowtow to them. And as a result of that, they have decided they're just going to go for Trump. And they have been doing that. They have been openly critical of the combination of Corker, Flake, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and a few other kind of potential individuals, such as John McCain, who recently has had a serious cancer surgery and is seemingly trying to go back to his maverick reputation, as well as kind of like diehard conservatives, but not in the traditional sense, maybe a bit more of the actual libertarian sense, such as Rand Paul, means that in effect, Trump has basically lost his governing majority in the Senate on an awful lot of issues. Because keeping all of those people happy, as has been demonstrated on healthcare and is probably going to be demonstrated on tax reform, is very, very difficult. And none of these people actually like him that much, if at all. So I think on the Senate front, it's entirely possible you will actually have the numbers to be able to do something about it. In the House of Representatives, that is where things get a little bit trickier. Because again, in the Senate, you've got Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is a very shrewd political operator. And if he sees what way the wind is blowing, he will back an impeachment proceeding. Especially as, again, he does not like Trump, given that Trump spends an awful lot of his time attacking Mitch McConnell's leadership.
Very shrewd political move on Trump's part.
Incredibly, yeah. Ryan, spineless invertebrate that he is probably where things get a bit interesting in terms of whether or not the GOP do something. And really, it boils down to, I think, the thing that's going to make the difference is to what extent the House of Representatives and the kind of the free, that kind of Freedom Caucus grouping, the kind of the hard right, Tea Party-esque elements, see a benefit in ditching Trump to bring in Pence. Because every way of getting rid of Trump brings in Mike Pence as President of the United States, which, you know, you don't have to like Mike Pence as a person, you don't have to like his politics at all, but he's not batshit crazy. So, at least not in the same way Trump is, and he's not necessarily a direct threat to democracy in the United States. And I think there's a very strong case to be made that the GOP in the House of Representatives may jump at that chance.
They're trying to get tax reform passed. Maybe my favourite Trump story this week was that Paul Ryan went to Trump to say, how would you brand the bill? Because apparently Trump has a knack for branding. And Trump comes back and says, I wanted to be the cuts, cuts, cuts bill. Which just seemed like terrible optics and terrible policy and terrible politics all in the same four words.
I think it's fair to say, actually, that Trump does have a knack for branding. It's just take whatever Trump says and do the complete opposite of it. Cuts, cuts, cuts is just hideous. Like Trump just is not actually very good at these things.
We've gone a long way from the Steve Bannon massive infrastructure. Do you remember Infrastructure Week?
I do remember Infrastructure Week. It was seemed like almost a time that Trump might have actually had a decent policy.
If tax reform isn't passed, mm-hmm. and I imagine that, again, dubious prediction alert, I imagine it will fall through because there are surely enough Republicans with political nous to know that if you're going to gut Medicaid, which is essentially what this bill does, because they unlike the Bush tax cuts, these have to be funded, don't they? They can't just increase the deficit.
Yeah.
So you've got to pay for it, and the way they're paying for it is essentially by calamitously cutting spending. Well, I don't think you can do that without losing the House next year, or at least without taking a significant electoral hit next year. In which case, you can't, as you say, you can't get the Republicans to agree because you've got the Libertarian Freedom Caucus nutjobs on one side and you've got the people
moderates.
The people, they wouldn't have been called moderates in the heyday of Republican moderates in the 50s and 60s, but we call them moderates because, hey, it's how the wind blows.
You can at least understand where they're coming from.
Yes, just genuinely don't see how you try and bridge that gap. I can't see it passing.
The failure to pass Obamacare. The failure to pass the repeal of Obamacare definitely does demonstrate the difficulty in lining up those disparate groups behind a single policy notion. But I do think it is possible, and I don't think you should underestimate the fear of going into the midterms without a single policy win.
Mm.
That is something which would massively damage the Republicans. They are already suffering in terms of donations. Major party donors have just closed up their wallets because they're not happy with how things are working and going. And it's when you start digging into the donations of the Democrats compared to the Republicans over the past like 6 months or so, it's starting to look like get very, very close to one of those movements where the Democrats could have a wave election result where they just sweep the board in a lot of their different areas. That's not to say that will happen. It's an awful long time before those midterm elections, and anything can happen in that period. The electoral map in 2018 for the Democrats isn't great at the best of times. Most of the seats that are up for election in the Senate, for instance, are theirs. I think there's only six, which are actually Republican controlled at the moment. Most of those aren't going to change hands, but there might be enough of an edge to them to get control of that.
A lot of Democrats feel like they're falling into the trap of, well, we just have to rely on Trump to mess up and people will vote for us regardless, which didn't work last year and may well not work again. I take your point that tax cuts are probably easier to pass than the Obamacare, because tax cuts are something that the Republicans have wanted for ages. Those big donors you talked about, the Koch brothers, they're always talking tax cuts. So maybe there's a sliver of a chance, but I think the Russia scandal that's going on and the dysfunction in the Trump White House and the fact they just keep causing scandals for themselves and manufacturing them out of nowhere just mean I think it's very difficult for anything to try and happen.
Yeah, I mean, they are not making life easy for themselves. That is absolutely accurate. But I just don't think you should underestimate the appeal of cutting taxes to the Republican Party. It's not to say it will be an easy thing to get past, but I think of all the potential policy wins, this is by far the most likely for them.
Mm. Actually, I had a listen to the one we did last year, and despite the fact we're obviously stunned and scared that we're all going to die,
the days before we moved into the bunker,
it stands up pretty well, actually, I think. But one thing we don't talk about, apart from a minute or so before the end, are the Russia hacks and the part that Russian media and fake news and Twitter bots play in the election. And we'll probably do another podcast on this at some point over the next few months. I think it's maybe obvious now there's some sort of pattern going on when you look at the fact that German MPs get hacked, when you look at the hack of the Macron campaign at the end of the French elections. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of Russian interference in the Brexit campaign and bots on social media. And there's definitely something in Russian cyber warfare to try and break up the EU, to try and destabilise liberal democracy. This is going to happen again, isn't it? Do you think it will happen in the midterms?
Is it possible? Absolutely. Are Russia going to be trying to do it? Almost certainly. The question is, what do they do? For the midterms, it's not a single election, remember.
Mm.
It's 50 state elections plus God knows how many congressional elections, all of which are going to have their own separate infrastructure, all of which are going to have their own separate ways of doing with things. And certainly, you know, to be quite honest, Russia probably could hack most of them if they really wanted to. But who do they target? Why do they target that person? Now, going after the DNC again would be an obvious one, but I can almost guarantee you that the DNC have upped their cybersecurity since then. So how can Russia actually do what it wants to do again? Can it just easily hack into things? Probably not to the same extent it could previously. Once you get caught doing that sort of stuff, it's a lot more difficult to do it again, because, you know, systems get updated. What you are more likely to see from them, they're doing this already, and you can still see this online for the UK with Brexit as well, is utilize their social media accounts that they've created, whether they be literal bots in the sense of their automated programs, or people who are seemingly paid to just sit there and engage with, you know, a certain point of view. On both the left and the right, you will find basically pro-Bernie Sanders accounts who are obviously Russian trolls when you look into it, at the same time as you'll find Make America Great Again, you know, like Donald Trump accounts that are obviously Russian facades as well. That is probably where they'll end up focusing their power, because there's been various bits of analysis which have shown there are hopes of these accounts on Twitter especially, which will make dissemination of certain views online quite interesting and relevant to certain people. Because, again, quite fascinating is there's been a study recently which has shown that the more like if you tweet about politics on Twitter, you are not likely to be a moderate. you are likely to have extreme views in some way. And if you've got extreme views, that means you're much more likely to be entrenched. And if you're entrenched, you're much more likely to just take things at face value. If you take them at face value, when that Bernie Sanders or random Trump account ends up being retweeted into your timeline saying whatever hashtag fake news story is actually listed in it, well, you're more likely to believe it. And that is going to influence your opinion on the on elections. That's going to affect your opinion on the opposition. You're much more likely to suddenly start thinking that all Republicans are scum and that they don't deserve to be listened to, that all Brexiters are dumb because they're badly educated or whatever. And that's where I suspect an awful lot of Russia's focus is going to be. And that's not new to them at all. When you look back to when they invaded the Ukraine, sorry, Georgia, when there were all kinds of videos and things on YouTube, you looked at the YouTube comments, every last one comment underneath that was upvoted was pro-Russian. They have been doing this for ages, and they are very, very good at it. And I think the West is just slowly starting to cotton on to that fact.
Is this now the new normal? So Clinton talks about how it used to be that wars were fought over land and sea, and then it became the air, and now wars are fought over cyberspace as well. Is this just something we're going to get in every election, in a subsequent British election, and we're going to be subjected to it too, do you think?
Potentially. Quite honestly, it is a possibility. I think in the UK sense, though, I suspect from, you know, the Russian perspective, taking the current situation as is, they win regardless. They either have the Tories, who are hell-bent on taking Britain out of Europe and isolating it, and therefore weakening Europe and potentially weakening all kinds of defensive pacts and things like that. Or you have Jeremy Corbyn, a man who's not a fan of NATO, a man who has argued to withdraw from NATO and abolish NATO in the past, who's not a fan of the NATO pact. From the Russian perspective, it might be they don't care who wins, because the chances are the British outcome destabilises something somewhere anyway.
Matt, so we're so busy setting ourselves on fire, there's not much point in bothering with us.
It's entirely possible. That's how I'd be viewing it if I were them.
I feel it fitting that a podcast about the American elections should end with Jeremy Corbyn, as is often the case on this podcast. We have an episode on our series From the Cradle to the Grave about universities out on Sunday. In the meantime, we'll have posts up on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, and updates on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. It's not financed by Russian Gold. Vladimir, if you do want to sponsor the podcast, you can get in touch with me at Paperback Rioter.
And you can get in touch with me at Sender Radical.
Happy plotting.